Chris Harmon.
Well, the previous speakers have outlined what has been the central problem for Marxist economics for the last 40 years. Because in a period which capitalism entered into recurrent crises, and in which all empirical measures of profit show it falling from about 1970 to 1982, and then never recovering, covering more than half of its fall. It recovers in each period of the expansion of the system, and then falls with each crisis. You have this strange situation where Marxist economists have been stuck upon trying to understand, trying to interpret Marx and come up against these problems laid down 100 years ago by von Porkowitz and about 50 years ago by Okashio. And I wouldn't be as rude about them as I think sometimes Alan is, and I think Andrew is occasionally in the book, because some of them have tried sincerely and hard to come to terms with it, but nevertheless they come across two, what I think is two basic fundamental problems. And I laid out in Andrew's book, and as he says, Andrew didn't discover this. I mean, it is incredible that Robin Murray in the Cyclist style duplicated bulletin of the Conference of Social Economists, I think in 1973, using the corn model, a very simple model, laid out the arguments. There's a near solution to the problem in an article produced in Spanish by a man called Miguel Angel Garcia, which we reproduced in International Socialism. He wrote this about 77, we reprinted it about 78, 79. It's not quite the same as Andrew's position. I think, to be honest, Anwar Sheikh comes, in some of his attempts, comes close to it. But essentially, and I think what's absolutely clear, the central problem is the attempt to believe that you can use simultaneous equations to deal with the system moving through time. I find it quite amazing, because I've had many years of political disagreements with Adam Freeman. We held a school 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and I found myself arguing exactly the same arguments as Alan's argued. I felt that, just like the man in Molière who discovered him speaking prose, for 25 years I'd been a member of this little academic sect called the TSSI. I prefer not to use the initials because it does confuse people and so forth, but it's an interpretation which understands that production takes place through time, which is fairly obvious, but of course you have to remember the founding text of neoclassical economics, which is by Walras, has in it this one sentence, certain problems arise here with regard to the passage of time, but I will leave these aside for the time being. Walras doesn't rewrite terms. I'm told that eventually, 100 years later, Arrow and De Broglie return to this question in complicated mathematics that I can't understand, but it says something about that. And actually, von Porkowitz equations are simultaneous equations. They actually assume that production takes place in such a way that there's no accumulation, there's no change in prices, and so forth. It should be said also that the interpretations of Schleffer also make the same assumption, there is no change in the actual organisation of production over time, and therefore the inputs are the same as the outputs. Yeah. Now, Andrew's book, I referred to Robin Murray, and when I wrote my own little book explaining the crisis, I took for granted the argument put forward by Robin Murray, by Garcia and so forth. But I think what Andrew's book has a fantastic thing that it goes through very, very simply through these arguments. And it's not a question of what Marx said or what I didn't say. It's a question of what Marx said corresponded to the actual reality of how capital develops, and that the simultaneous explanations don't. And it's incredibly important, because one of the consequences of people not understanding these things and being bewildered, befuddled by the equations, has been that some of the best Marxists, they've value theory has become a substitute for explaining the world. Instead of starting by saying we have the theory of value and we can use it to interpret the world, value theory becomes almost an academic discipline by itself. I mean, I could read, I'm quite well inclined to Alfredo Saad-Filho, but his book on value of Marx, you read it, goes through this interpretation, that interpretation, the third interpretation, the fourth interpretation, and you end up being befuddled in your own mind. What on earth did Marx mean, and how is this at all to be used? And again, Alfredo is somebody who does serious work on development theory and so on and so forth, but I think he's not really learned how to use Marx in this situation. And I'm hoping that Andrew's book will help him. I think Andrew's book is important on a second question. It's not just a question of simultaneity. It's a thing which I must admit, I was confused, I'm only just clarifying my mind on this, is the claim that you have to, this is a bit technical for people who've not followed you, there are a few people here who won't, the claim that you have to disaggregate the inputs in terms of prices into values in order for theory to work. And actually, Andrew argues very, very strongly, is actually Marx starts with price, and in the real world we start with price. And for me, thinking it through, it's fairly simple. If you're talking in terms of the dynamics of a projectile moving through space, and something hits it, you interpret the deviation in terms of its movement. You don't need to disaggregate the origins of its momentum going back to the Big Bang in order to understand how it changes its movement in space. Or if you're a biologist trying to understand how a particular species evolves into another species, you look at the contingent factors around it which determine its change. You don't need to disaggregate back first to the origins of life all the way back to understand how it's developed. And similarly, you have, of course, abstraction is necessary when you deal with the reality. You have to abstract from the ups and downs of prices and so on and so forth. But at a particular point in time, if you want to understand how the system develops, you talk about the existing inputs and then how new inputs of labour and so forth shift that and change it and so forth. It's only if you do this that you can then come to understanding of important things in the system. The question of the crisis, the question of the impact of the growth in over the last 50 or 60 years of non-productive labour in the system, the way in which all these things, the impact of arms spending on the system, all sorts of complicated things which have to be implicated. And I think it's important. And I say it's important because these are not just academic arguments. Some of us, 3 days ago, were in a room with 1,000 very, very young people. I'm glad to say much younger than the average age in this room, or much younger than my average age. Slovenian quasi-Marxist Zizek talking. And at the end, someone from the floor, I must be of me, asked him about why he didn't refer to the role of surplus value and accumulation of surplus value in the class struggle, said, basically, Marxist value theory has been proved wrong. Now, I wouldn't have minded if only a third of the audience clapped in furiously, believing they'd been told all these lies by Marxists, Marxist dogmatists, which didn't fit the reality. And this situation, I think a book by Andrews needs to be propagated. I think at times the tone against other Marxists is a bit hard. On the other hand, I don't accept the pure pluralism of Alan. I'm in favour of pushing very, very hard to correct the line and let other people push their own line, and we have the debate. I should say there's one thing on which I disagree with Andrew, which is on the long-term trend of the rate of poverty fall. And I say this, of course, I think, there's different arguments about whether Marx did or did not say the rate of poverty would fall through one crisis after another. I think what's very, very important here, the central counterfactor to the tendency of the rate of poverty fall is the recurrent economic crisis. In an economic crisis, capital gets devalued and destroyed. Economic crisis and war. You have to understand, therefore, if you assume there's economic crises, of course, economic crisis can destroy enough capital so that the system re-emerges from the crisis with the rate of profit as high as before. If, however, you live in the 20th or the 21st century, in which the state is systematic and the big banks have systematically intervened to try and prevent the crisis developing to the full, then you have a situation in which they cannot, through crisis, devalue the rate of profit sufficiently, and therefore we see the picture of the last 30 or 40 years in which we have a decline in the rate of profit, which is only partially recovered. And this insight, I think, I owe it to a man who died about 4 years ago, Michael Kidron, who was absolutely committed to the idea of the long-term claim of the rate of profit, on the basis that if capitalism could not devalue through crisis, that's your face. And I say it's very, very important for the period we're in at the moment, because in a period where I think, in my particular feeling, I don't like to predict crisis, because you can't predict all the 1,001 elements of the system, how 1,000 multinationals and 160 different states interacting with each other are going to spell out. I think we're seeing the signs a bit like 1987 or 1997 of the beginnings of a development of a crisis. I expect the banks to intervene to try and stop the crisis. They'll probably defer it for a couple of years. When it comes to the crunch, they will be faced with a choice. Do we allow giant firms to go down and therefore cause such chaos to the system as a whole that parts of the system enter into a black hole of self-destruction, or do they intervene? And this means all sorts of complications in it. But to, even to begin to understand these, and this is where I'll end, you do need the sort of interpretation put out very, very clearly in Andrew's book. And I say this about Andrew's book, there's so much Marxist economics to fall into the trap of neoclassical economics, of believing you need 1,001 complicated calculations, absolutely, advanced mathematics, that those of us who gave up speaking mathematics after we did our advanced level, O-level, in 1961, those who gave up can't possibly understand, and you can understand Andrew's arguments, and you can understand sufficient to make some sense of the world today.
Yep.